My name is Ralph White. I'm an alcoholic. I have to take a little extra minute. Me and you, we didn't do our thing we usually do. So I have to do an extra minute by myself. You owe me. That's an inside. Dick, I want to thank you again. It's a wonderful thing. If we got anybody that's new to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you come from places that most of us come from, and that's the disinvited place, right? It's a wonderful thing to be asked out somewhere, and it's even better to be asked back, you know. And I have had the privilege and the opportunity to be at this particular conference, I don't even know how many times. And I think tonight I'm supposed to talk on the gift of sobriety. I think I've been tasked with that. And that's a no-brainer, you know. Give me something hard, Dick, you know. Talk about the gifts of sobriety. And when I come to this place in particular, it's not hard for me. I've been, I think I've been blessed in some ways more than a lot of people get to be. I'm going to try to transmit some of it. I came at a particular time. You know how you hear people. I hear my sponsor who is sitting right here in the front. And he often talks about Chuck C. And all of the people that have been around a long time. See, Mildred, Polly. I'm like, how did everybody get to sit at his feet? But apparently he was that kind of guy, right? And I get to now talk about, when you talk about the gifts of sobriety, when I come to this place, I get to talk about having one-on-one conversations with the late, great Tom I. We just lost him. I get to talk about sitting at the feet of Sandy Beach in this place. I get to talk about getting scolded by the late, great Clancy I. You got to get scolded by Clancy, you know what I mean? And I get to talk about hugging Polly Pistol. I get to talk about getting my face pinched by Mildred F. I get to talk about having a front row seat with Bob and Linda B. You know, and it may not mean nothing if you knew, you know, and I'm a guy that collected baseball cards. I knew what Elgin Baylor averaged way back when the Celtics were beating up on my Lakers back in the 60s. I'm a collector. I'm a follower. I'm a student of my craft. What I like, I love. What I get into, I'm not a sipper. Never have been a sipper. I don't sip on anything that I do, you know. And I'm not a sipper in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've dove all the way in, and as a result of that, I've been a person who gets inspired. I came here out of desperation. I stay here out of inspiration. The desperation's left a long time. I don't like to say that. It's not the right thing to say. But to be honest, I haven't felt that in a long time, but I continue to get inspired. I think that's one of my gifts in this deal. My sponsor talks about that all the time, you know, having a gift. And it's not everybody's. But one of my gifts is falling in love with you guys from the time I met you. That's a gift. It's not everybody's. It's some people that don't find us interesting. It's some people that don't find us fascinating. It's some people that find us corny. It's some people that find us intimidating. It's some people that find us unapproachable. You know, but my gift is I've always found you warm and welcoming. You know, my sobriety date is October 11th, 1986. I've been with you guys 36 years of my life. I'm 69 years old. I've been with you longer than I've been without you, and I'm much better off when I'm in your company. And I find that I do a lot better in here than I do on my own. On my own, I drive around doing what everybody else does. Sometimes when I'm by myself, you know, I have had times in recovery. I can remember driving when I was in my third valley. And I've had three valleys in recovery. And I remember driving my car and looking out the window at a homeless guy pushing a cart, and I was envying him. It felt to me, now some of you car pushers are like, dude, it wasn't like it looked like to you. But it felt to me like, damn, he don't have no responsibilities. He has no cares in the world, because I felt the weight of the world on my shoulders in sobriety. I felt crushed. I felt defeated. I felt like I fell in sobriety, you know, and I've been in dark places in sobriety. None as dark as it was before I came here. I grew up in Watts in the 60s, and I got a mom that was a single mom that raised six boys by herself. My old man was an alcoholic, and he my old man didn't have an adverse influence on me. I used to think he didn't have any impact on me, but how could he not? How can he not? The fact of his absence had a profound presence on my life growing up, and it took me some inventories, and I never share about that healed relationship. Maybe I'll touch on it for a minute. I don't know. But we grew up without a dad. And my dad had been in the house till I was 7 or 8 years old. Wasn't violent, wasn't abusive, he was absent. And he wasn't a man that I was proud of. I've heard a lot of men in here right now, and they talk about their dad. You know, my sponsor talks about his dad being his hero. And my dad was a guy that I looked at with disdain and disgust. My dad was a guy that you know, was pretty much, he was a non-entity, which was a big entity. And I was ashamed and embarrassed about that, which is a trip, because I grew up in South Central Los Angeles, and in the school I grew up in, probably more kids than less didn't have a dad at the house. But if you're selfish and self-centered like me, your circumstance is always the circumstance. And it felt to me like I was the only kid that brought his uncle to the father-son banquet. I was the only kid whose mom showed up at the PTA meetings. And not, now, that's because I live in where I live, right? So anyway, I grow up like that, you guys. I got a mom that's amazing. She's still alive, and she's still with us. Talk about the gifts of sobriety. Because I attribute, well, Ralph, what does that have to do with sobriety? I'm going to tell you in a minute. What my mom still being here has to do is a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't scientifically prove that, but I'm going to submit something for your consideration in a minute. So I'm growing up, you guys, and my mom is a force. My mom is a force, and she's not a force in the sense of, you know, she's not Michelle Obama, and she didn't do big stuff like that, but my mom does big stuff. You know, she raised six boys. My mom was on welfare, you know, my mom, you know, and she refused to settle for it. So I've always been a person who has some examples of spiritual living in front of their face, though I didn't appreciate it at the time, right? And my mom refused to settle for this welfare thing that she had. Six boys, raising them by herself, going to work, two jobs, catching the bus to the valley, going and cleaning and washing people's clothes, ironing their clothes, coming back home on the bus real late at night. And I'm in elementary school meeting her at the bus stop. And at a certain point, I stopped meeting her at the bus stop because my mom, when she got off from doing those people's clothes, she started going to Fremont Adult School at night. So she'd get off early and she went back to adult school. I only can imagine being a grown man now with a family, what that must have been like. You got six depending on you for everything. You decide, I'm going to take a little pay cut for a minute, and I'm going to invest in myself. And she put herself back through high school at night. She got a GED, and she went to junior college. And my mom, I'm in high school right now. Now I'm in college. And my mom graduates from college the same year as my younger brother, Ron. Ronnie graduated one year. My mom graduated that same year. And then my mom went on to have a long career in the insurance industry and retired with a bunch of accolades and the rest. Now, all that. Like I said, she ain't Michelle Obama, but she is huge to me. Because my mom has a whole bunch of people that call her mom. She's been a pillar in her church community. She's been a pillar in my neighborhood. She's a remarkable lady. And then when her sons came to you, she's a pillar in the AA community. You know, there's a lot of people in Los Angeles, California that come to the White House, my last name is White, on Thanksgiving or on Christmas. You know, because if you ain't got a family, and think about it, when you knew and you were estranged and you don't have nobody, well, her sons came to you and their friends came to her. And the White House on Thanksgiving and Christmas is full of people. And so it's a whole bunch of y'all to call my mom, mom. And I don't know why I veered down that path right now. But anyway, I have always, as a result, and I don't know if it's DNA or the rest, but I've always had in front of me an example of you can do whatever you want to do. You can be whatever you want to be. And I've always felt like that. I've always felt like I would lead a life. I would leave footprints. I've always felt like I'd do something with my life. I've always been goal-driven, ambitious, and I wouldn't say a seeker. Because at the time, I wasn't a seeker. At the time, man, I was a driver. You know, I was a hard-driving guy, and I'm going to do something with my life. I'm going to make my mom proud. That was a big theme of mine. And coming up in the 60s, man, when you come up in the 60s, if there's any of you guys that come up at that, wasn't that an optimistic time? You know, it was a changing, and it was a turbulent time, and I'm a cat that's caught up in it. I'm going to make a difference in my life and in my community. And that's the backdrop of the guy that ended up with you guys. I go off to college. I'm not drinking. I'm not getting loaded yet, and I'm 18 years old. I landed UCLA, and I'm grown. And Bill's story, he talked about he sailed for over there. And how many sponsors we got in here? You know, how many people are tired of reading that, you know, War Fever? You know, I done read War Fever so many times, you know. But War Fever didn't hit me. But, you know, but just like Bill, when he talked about sailing, you know, for over there, and he talked about I was a part of life at last. I proved to the world I was important. I'm at UCLA. I'm at this school, man. I'm a part of life at last. I proved to the world I was important. Just like him, drinks started taking a more important and exhilarating part of my life. And I start doing the deal. I'm late to the party, you guys. I'm 18 years old. For you guys and some of you guys, that you were really well off into it. I see you, James. You know, I see you, James. Yeah. But I'm a late bloomer. But I'm late to the party, but ooh, when I get there, everybody knows I'm there. You know, I took to it. I took to it, man. I took to the lifestyle. Alcoholic, I took to everything about it. You know, and in the late 60s and the early 70s, man, it was, you know, free love, free sex, free drugs. And I took to it. But I'm not doing it to escape. I'm not doing it to be somebody else somewhere. I'm doing it because I'm 18 and I'm grown, and it's what you do. It's the thing to do when you've been locked up tight all these years. Because I'm the kind of guy, you guys, one of the common themes you hear from members of Alcoholics Anonymous who come and share at our meetings, one of the common themes you hear from many of our members is, I never felt like I fit in, and that's not a part of my story. I've never been interested in fitting in. I've always wanted to stand out. But I always thought that this guy that was, what alcohol did for me didn't make me somebody else. It made the real me come out. I thought the world had been deprived of the real Ralph White, you know, because I'm a shy guy and I'm a scary guy. I'm scared of girls, you know, but ooh, if you guys would get the benefit of me, but I'm scared of you, you know, and I'm a shy guy. I'm tongue-tied around the, now I'm really glib. I've always been articulate, but I get tongue-tied. I get scared. You know, in the book, you know, I'm a jump, you know, because we just talking, you know, in our book, you know. And in our book, and I don't read the book like it's scriptural. You know, I read the book like it's It's a compilation of experiences that some people put together. And so I don't read it like every single thing in there is going to describe me to the thing. So when Bill says resentment is the number one offender, I believe it. I believe it for him. I believe it for a lot of people. And I believe it is a hell of an offender in my life. But I'm going to tell you what drives my train is fear. You know, if Ralph was writing his own personal, you know, diary, fear is the, that one has been the driving force in my life. You know, and I'm the kind of guy that fear will cause me to do stuff that I'm, when we talk about it ought to be class, but still, I would have a fear of getting an ass whooping in front of you. So I would take one so that you wouldn't know I was scared of getting one. What? I'm not going to sit up here and let you know that you are scaring me. So I'd rather go ahead and take than to let you know I'm scared. I don't know if that makes, it's some guys that makes sense for. You know, the penitentiary is full of guys like that. You know, I ain't scared of nothing. And it's fear that drove. But fear has always driven my train, you guys. But I'm in this school, man, and I'm a high achiever, and I'm a doer, and so I'm doing stuff, and alcohol is growing in my life, and it's becoming a more and more and more important part of my life, and I'm drinking in 71, and by the end of 71, I'm drinking and smoking commercial weed in 72. I'm drinking, smoking commercial weed, added cocaine to it. So now I'm doing other drugs. I'm doing alcohol. I'm in the mix and I'm gone. You know, I thought that I was described in our chapter there as a solution. I thought I'm described in the paragraph that says, but what about the real alcoholic, right? I mean, that's how I'm described. I didn't know. I thought I was described in the paragraph right before that one. We're going to talk about the certain hard drinker, given a sufficient reason to stop or moderate. When I grow up, I'm going to cut out this foolishness and I'm going to slow it down. I never said I'm going to stop. I'm going to slow it down. I'm going to slow this down, you know, when I grow up. We graduate from school. My buddies, they get jobs. They go to grad school. They get married. They slow it down. I got that thing. I got that thing, and you guys know the rest of the story, and I get married, and I have a kid, and, you know, and so I go through the deal, and by 1985, the wheels have come all the way off. The wheels were off in 1979, if I look back, probably before then. The only way you can evaluate your relationship with alcohol, though, is a rearview mirror experience. All of us in here, none of us can really say when we cross that line. There's no warning signs to say, if you take the next one, you enter in the region from which is no return to, you know. Matter of fact, by the time we realize we already across the line, we've been across the line. Cold thing about the disease I suffer from is this. By the time I realize I have a problem and need to do something about it, it's already too late for me to do something about it. Damn, alcoholism, it's insidious. I hear a lot of people talk about, you know, my disease is waiting on me and it's doing push-ups and it wants me dead. And I appreciate the value of that analogy, of that metaphor. You know, I appreciate the value of it, that my disease is out to kill me. But the scary part for me is my disease is not an intelligent force. My disease is an implacable disease. It ain't like you can reason with it. No, it ain't out to kill you, Ralph. It ain't out to do the. It's what cancer does. It's what diabetes does. It does not have a plan for you. It does what it does. It's implacable. It is relentless. It is interminable. Dude, it ain't personal. It ain't personal. It ain't out to get. You need to get out the dance because the dance is going to go on whether you want to or not. It is, you know, so I'm not one that says it's out to get. No, It does what it does. You know, it is its own thing. And so I'm in it though, you guys, and it does what it does. It starts taking stuff from me. It does all the things that it does to people like me. I am not a bad boy. I'm not a convict. I'm not a go to jail kind of guy. In fact, I'm still the boy that my college sweetheart married this guy, and I'm the one that'll build up the structure and tear it down with the senseless series. I'm the tear down guy. I'm a tear down specialist. And the cold thing about getting with me is it's hard to get away from me because I'm not a bad boy. And the guy that you hung your hopes on a long time ago occasionally peeks out again. And I'm likable. I don't put hands on you. I don't cuss you out. I don't call you out your name. I'm the heartbreaker. I'm the heartbreaker. I let you down. I embarrass you. I'm the one that you have to show up at the office party again this year with an excuse about why your husband ain't there. I'm the one that you got to show up at the parent-teacher conference again with why I'm here on my own. I'm the one that you got to see the landlord the first of every month with an excuse about why you don't have the money. I'm the one that you got to make sure is candles in the house because we're going to have at some point gas, electric, water, phone. At some point, they're going to be shut off. I'm that guy. I'm the guy that you put all your hopes in. I'm the guy that you give the ATM card to because you saved up $10,000 to buy your first house. Some money came in. And you make the mistake, silly you, of giving the, in those days it was called a versateller. When they first came out, there's some people in here that's old enough to remember when on Friday you better make it to the bank and get some money because you ain't gonna have a chance to get money till Monday. It wasn't no ATMs. It wasn't just walk in the bank with a card where they check your signature. And I'm old enough to put it. So when these ATMs first came out, wow, you could get money at any time. Remember that, some of you guys? And so my wife made the mistake of giving her husband the bank card and the PIN number so he could go to the store this particular night and get some diapers for Rain. He remembered the PIN number, and from that moment on he proceeded to go in that purse and take that card. Some days he wouldn't replace the card for a week or two. And in those days, you guys, you didn't get on a computer and check your bank every day like you can now, right? You would have to go in the bank to check your bank balance. When the first ATMs came out, you could start your... And my wife, why would she? Silly her. Why would she think she had to monitor her bank account? We got money. She just gave the card to her husband one day to go get some diapers. Well, when it's $10,000 and then it becomes $9,600, that ain't so bad. $8,200, that ain't so bad. But about 65 days in, and you look up and it's $80... Yeah, some men that winced. And so, you know, it was ugly, as you can imagine. And eventually, in 85, I got put out of my house. I had a 2.5-year-old daughter at the time. And my daughter was 2 when I got put out. Went to stay at my mom's house. And my 5 brothers ended up at my mom's house that year. Here's where I'm going to circle back to that statement I made to you guys about one of the primary gifts I've gotten in recovery is I got a 92-year-old mom that's still here with us. In the year of 1985, when these 6 boys moved back with their mom, and my mom used to come home from work every day with a bag of groceries. Because if she kept food in the refrigerator, these 6 grown leeches that she gave birth to would have been making plates and selling them out in the neighborhood so we can get what we wanted to. Because it was like that. The year of 1985, my mom had a nervous breakdown. I just connect the dots. Remember when Bill, You know, when he returned from, he came back from Montreal, and then him and his old lady, he couldn't keep a job, and they ended up moving in with his in-laws. Whenever I read that part, you guys, I just cringe. Because to be an active alcoholic and living with your old lady's parents, that is not a good look for a guy like Ralph. Because I'm coming in at 2 or 3 and her daddy looking at me like, really, dude? You know, I cringe when I read about that. Bill was staying with Lois's parents, right? And coincidentally, both of them got ill. One of them died. They lost the house. Now, none of this was going on till Bill moved in. Coincidentally, in the year of 1985, the six boys came back to Mrs. White's house. My mama had a nervous breakdown. We almost lost her. And her son started coming to you in 1986. You connect the dots. Mama had a nervous breakdown in 1985. Almost died. Son started coming to you in 1986. Four of us are with you right now. Three of us have been with you continuously. You know, for my baby brother Rod, on Christmas Day of this year, will be 35 years sober. Me and Ronnie are 36 years sober. My brother Reggie has made it back after a ways. But we got four of us here, and my mom is still here. Son's in the house, getting loaded at 85. We almost lose her. Come to you in 1986. Some of you guys missed Sonia's first song when she sang about the ripples. And you may think that you were just here with yourself. And for every person that gets this drinking, we talk about tornadoes roaring through the lives. We talk about the blameless kids and the warped lives of the parents and the rest of that. But check this out. Just like the disease is progressive, recovery is progressive. And for everybody sitting up in here, I see a whole bunch of people sitting in that seat right with you. If you look real close, you'll see a 92-year-old lady right here, because every time I went to a meeting, she was at a meeting. She didn't know it. Every time me, Ronnie, Reggie ride at a meeting, my mama's getting up. And if you look real close, you'll see a 39-year-old young lady over here. She was 2 and a half when I got to you. You talk about gifts. You talk about a brother who is grateful. You talk about a man that came to you at 33 years old, and I never thought. And I didn't want a whole lot. I hadn't looked at myself full face in the mirror in over a year when I got to you guys. You know, I had been a guy who had some stuff. You know, I'm the real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. In 1983, I got my dream. It's interesting because when we tell our stories, we tell them in a general way. So you don't get the backdrop. You don't get it fleshed out. And inside of some of the crazy stuff was some other stuff. Because while my alcoholism was growing, I was growing in the workplace. In 1983, I got my dream job. I was working in management in the law department of a major utility company. I had a big glass window in my office that allowed me to look out on my workforce of about 80 people. That's cool. The downside is it allowed them 80 people to look in on me, you know, and it ain't nothing cool about being on one of them 6 or 7 day runs and you sitting up in there and you do that whiplash thing, you know, because you and you look up to see if anybody looking, and everybody's looking just like because I'm the business guy by day and I'm vampire by night. I'm the real Dr. Jekyll. But the book talks about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde living the double life. I had a double life. I had a double life in the double life. I would go to happy hour because we had this group of people at the job and we were kind of the renegades, and we go to happy hour and we go to people's houses, and when we get through with happy hour, now we're going to go finish drinking and smoking weed and getting loaded at somebody's house. So we the renegades from work. But the renegades from work don't know when I leave them, I go to get with my real people now. I'm the double life guy. Because I'm the guy that gets grimy, dirty, stay out 3 and 4 days. I'm that guy. I'm the guy that show up in the same suit at work. I'm that guy. You know, I'm the double life guy. And so I got a lot when I made it to you guys, you know. And I thought, you know, when I lost that job in management in 1984, when they said, dude, you got, you know, because I'm vampire by night and I'm business guy by day. And you guys know that dynamic. The vampire always outgrows the businessman. The vampire always outgrows the soccer mom. The vampire always outgrows the housewife, you know. And the vampire started coming to work. Vampire don't work at work, you know. And they told him, they called a vampire in one day and said, you gotta go, take dude with you. Bam. Dream job gone. That's 84. I get put out the house in 85. And guys like me don't get second chances. And I start doing the aimless walk from 85 to 86. Visited you guys one time in August of 85, stayed 89 days. Got a real understanding of my condition. And I came back, I crawled back October 1986. And I had not looked at myself full face in the mirror. You know, the first step wasn't a hard step for me. We're going to have people to go through the steps this weekend. So I'm not going to step on their toes and start doing that. But I'm a guy that came in here off that. You know, I'm a guy that came in here, you know, spiritual life. I had already had an overdose of spiritual life. Overdose, not of spiritual life. I had an overdose of religious education. I grew up in a Southern Baptist church. And I'm a Sunday school kid. And I'm a, you know, one of my character defects has always worked in my favor, even when it's worked against me. And in my favor is I'm going to look good. So I'm going to be in front of the church on Sunday morning reciting what the Bible verses were. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be the kid from Sunday school class who could summarize what the lesson was. You know, I'm the one in, on Christmas, which we're coming up on Christmas. I'm the one in the Christmas play. I'm the one reciting the stuff. I'm the one doing all that. You know, so I had an overdose of religious education. But when I made it to you guys, you know, more dead than alive that October 1986, some funny things started happening to Ralph along the way. And I didn't know I fell in the grace. I did not know. I wasn't looking for that. I was looking to get the gorilla off my back. And the gifts of sobriety have been numerous. And it started when I was in the Harbor Light on my first 90 days. My friend, I was talking to Bob, and he had one of his, you know, and we get road dogs, you know, in the program. And, you know, I had some dog, you know, and Bob is my sponsor, and I know it. But he sponsored another, and they were more like dogs, too, him and Howard P. And I was talking to him about Howard, because Howard used to say things like this, too. And I would take it personally, like he was saying at the route. But he'd say it to anybody. He'd say, make sure if you see God, you know, wherever you see God, you mark that spot and go visit it often, right? And my first place, and I would see God in certain places, you guys, and I would start calling it by name. I wasn't scared of it. You know, when I came to you, God, I fell into grace, and I fell into Alcoholics Anonymous at its finest, you know, and it's always at its finest when you're desperate and when you're hungry. You know, if you ain't desperate, and if you ain't done, and if you ain't through, and if you ain't surrendered, it seemed like Alcoholics and man, that's the lame answer, you know. But I was surrendered, man, and Alcoholics surrendered me to this deal, and I came in, and so I'm coming up on 90 days. I'm still at the Harbor Light program, and at the Harbor Light, you know, they had me on disability, and they would save the money from disability. It would pay for my stay, and they put money on my books for when I left the Harbor Light program. And that Christmas, we're coming up on the Christmas season now. I went into Harbor Light October the 13th. So when it was in December, I was coming up on 90 days, and I went and I asked them for some money so I could buy my daughter a birthday present. And they gave a Christmas present, and they gave me $60 off the books. Now, I'm a over-the-top guy. I'm a real ostentatious guy. I'm a real, you know, big. I do stuff big. I like big statements. I didn't have a daddy, so my daughter's got a guy that overcompensated for it, and I don't care. I like nice stuff, and I buy it. You know, and then I pay the price sometimes, you know. So don't make it, I'm not going to make it sound like that, because I've also had times when I've scuffled. I've also had times, you guys, in sobriety when I've been check to check. I've also had times in sobriety when I've been no check to no check. I've also had times in sobriety with the gifts of this program when I have been lifted by the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am a three legacy guy to the I'm not one of these guys that'll talk about, you know, you get into recovery sometime and you hear guys that talk about, man, meat makers, you know, and they make fun of certain stuff. Meat makers make it, oh, that ain't, you don't know. I don't feel the need to diminish any part of our program for any other part. I loved it when Mildred was sharing and Mildred said, I was going to meetings and I was dying inside and people would say, keep going to meetings. And Mildred didn't say, well, meetings wasn't helping. Mildred said, I kept going to meetings. It just wasn't enough. I needed to add more to my meetings because I'm a meeting guy. I'm a meeting guy at heart. At our best in Alcoholics Anonymous, what we do best is one drunk talking to another. And where we have those conversations, best is at our meetings. We can have them at the diner, and we have some good ones at the diner. But I could be one of these guys that get real smug and get real self-righteous and get real, you know, above the fray and just, okay, so me and Dick, we just going to have our conversations at the house and let the rest of the, you know, the peasantry, you guys go to them meetings, right? What? I had a guy, you know, see, I'm going to get off this soapbox in a minute, Bob, I promise. But I'm a soapbox for a minute. I was on a Zoom meeting. I was in a meeting with a guy, and this guy called himself after I shared. And I guess he misheard and think I'm one of these, you know. But this guy said, I went to one of them meetings, you know, where it was just a straight participation meeting. The people were in there talking about their problem and so he said, I'm glad to be out of enemy territory and at a meeting like this. Enemy territory, a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? I wonder what you call the bar. I'm off the soapbox. Anyway, you know, so there are no, man, I'm a meeting guy. I'm a meeting guy. And here's the reason why I'm a fellowship guy. Because I'm also, more than that, I'm a grace guy. I'm a connected to the power guy. I'm a guy that needs to be empowered. I'm a guy that runs out of steam on his own. I'm a guy that has not found another way to connect with power easier, better, and more sustaining than our 12 steps. So I'm really wed to that. But I'm also a guy that got, I was ass out. You know, 22 years sober, lost my marriage, lost all my money, lost my job in front of everybody, lost my house, and the fellowship of alcohol, you guys carried me. You carried me. You carried me for a very long time. You know, I remember I was in Europe somewhere doing one of our deals, and I had $32 in my pocket. And that $32, you guys, was my net worth. That was my entire net worth. And I could have looked at it one or two ways. What the hell you doing over here with 30? Or I could look at it like, wow, what a fellowship. What a program. I don't have no money and I'm rich. I got value. I got usefulness. I got purpose. I got people. I got, oh my God. Who wouldn't want to be part of a fellowship like that? So I'm 87 or 88 days sober, you guys. I do big stuff. I got this $60 in my pocket. I go to downtown Los Angeles. If you go shopping in downtown Los Angeles, that's not like shopping on Rodeo Road. Downtown Los Angeles is like swap meets and little flea markets and like that. And I go into one of these little shops and I can still see it in my mind's eye. I buy my daughter a little pink jacket with a gray fur collar. For $40. You know it wasn't much, right? A $40 little jacket. Little pink jacket with a gray fur collar in my mind. Looking back on it, I'm like, really? But guys, when I bought her that jacket that year, 1986, that $40 jacket looked like a mink stole. I suspected Daddy was coming back. Mark that spot like Howard said. One of my first spiritual experiences, one of my first gifts to Alcoholics Anonymous, Daddy delivered that present that Christmas. Suspected Daddy was coming back. You know, and on Christmas the following year, I'm a year sober now. And me and Ronnie are staying at my mom's house. Another gift of recovery. The guys that almost killed their mom. The mom said, she let us back. It ain't everybody's story. It is not everybody's story. But my mom, for some reason, like Dr. Silkworth saw in Bill Wilson, when Bill Wilson sat up in the hospital and told Silkworth what happened to him. Silkworth had seen this dude's act before, too. I don't have no idea why Silkworth would listen to him. I have no idea why Silkworth didn't think you hallucinating. I have no idea why Silkworth didn't think, oh, man, this is one of them flashbacks. I have no idea why Silkworth didn't think, oh, okay, here's some game again. Here's some drag. I have no idea except for the fact that the power of the power is apparently so overwhelming that from the outside looking in, Silkworth looked at Bill Wilson and said, something's happened. The power of the power is so overwhelming that my mama looked at me and Ronnie. Two dudes that she didn't have no business letting back in the house that quick. We almost killed her. And my mama looked at me and Ronnie, both of us under a year sober. Come on. The power of the power. First expressed through Alcoholics Anonymous. And my mom immediately. So me and Ronnie are up in the house, you guys, right? Talk about the gifts of recovery. And so Rod, my baby brother was different. Me, Ronnie, Reggie, we schoolboys. You know, we had a lot of equity in my mind. I sometimes used to think, why would my mom put up with us so long? And the reason I think, you guys, is because we had a lot of equity built up. Her sons didn't start, you know, performing. I listened to Bob and Linda, and I'm like, oh, my God. Because my mom's sons, we didn't start performing until we went to college. So my mom had been proud of us for a long, long time. She was accustomed to sticking her chest out. She was accustomed to going to events and bringing home trophies. She was accustomed to going to events and people saying, oh, Miss Wall. So she was accustomed to that. It took a while for us to erode that. Thank God. Thank God. I got a mom that didn't give up on her boys. And so me, Ronnie, and Reggie are sober now. And my baby brother, Rod, was different. He did start early. Rod was slick. Rod was hustler. Rod was pretty boy. Rod was dope dealer. Rod did time. None of us did none of that. Rod did all that. And so in the year 1987, he had gone up in the Harbor Light again, and he got put out. Because he would not do this way of life. And he called in November. And he said, can I come home? You had a home. You were in a treatment program. No, you cannot. My mom gave me the phone because in those days, we were designated as the people to talk to. No, I'm tired. If you want to talk to one of your brothers while you out there, I'm going to let them. And I hung up the phone. Didn't have Star 69 at that time. Didn't have cell phones. This was a landline. This was 1987. And I told my brother, you can't come here. And he was on Skid Row. The white boy, we don't do Skid Row. Now, we would do Skid Row, but we got a mama that always bailed us out, right? And my brother was on Skid Row. I cried real tears. I wanted to jump in my car and try to go find him. I called my boy at the time, Leon Strange, and I saw he said, you did the right thing. It's always good to have a sponsor, and it's always good to have closed-mouth friends in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Because a lot of times I've always had trained feet, and I've always run that whatever it is I'm doing by somebody, you know, and so I'm crying. And it was cold that November in 1986. And I remember on Christmas Eve, I got another call from my baby brother. He said, can I come home for Christmas? I said, I'll come get you in the morning. Tell me where you'll be. And I drove to where he said he would be, and he wasn't there. And I drove around the corner, and I came back, and he still wasn't. I drove one more time, and this figure jumped out in front of my car. Filthy, dirty, nasty, didn't recognize him. Tell my brother's a in the mirror 2 hours, pretty boy kind of guy. Jumped in front of my, didn't recognize him. Kate, with it. It was my brother. And he jumped in the car, and I drove home with the windows down, my head out, driving, you know. We get to my mom's house that Christmas morning, and my mom sees Rod, and she buckles, she faints. And she, Ronnie catches her, and she says, hurry up and get him in the house before my mom sees him. My grandmother was still alive. And we got Rod in the bathroom. When he tells the story now, he says he ran the water about 4 or 5 times, in and out, in and out, in and out. And when he tells the story, he says it's the best Christmas he ever spent. Because from Christmas Day of 1987 to this, my brother Rod has been with us. Talk about gifts of recovery. You know, and I never thought. And I never thought he'd want to be with us. Do you ever have anybody in your family? You might have it right now, a situation going on. Have you ever had a situation where you think to yourself, I know there's grace and I know there's God, but this person has voluntarily put himself beyond God's reach and ain't no hope for him? You heard Polly talk about waiting 41 years for her son. She didn't know it was like it, like with my brother. And so I'm here to tell you guys, you know, I used to think that about my baby brother. He voluntarily has put himself beyond God's reach. And I'm so glad that God that God is God, not me. You know, because that one right there, my baby brother Reggie, not my Barras baby, Reggie relapsed in 92. Never thought he'd see these rooms again. 16 years. 16 years. And Reggie came back to us in 2016. A lot of you guys, how many people do Zoom meetings? You know, a number of you may have seen my younger brother Reggie on a Zoom meeting. Reggie, when the pandemic came, he gave himself a commitment. He gave himself an assignment. And he started asking for people to send Zoom meetings to him. And a lot of you guys would send Zoom meetings to Reggie. And Reggie would compile these meetings every day. He still does it right now. And he sends them out all across the world. A Zoom directory of meetings. He doesn't even know the people. He says, send me your phone number. You know, send me your WhatsApp. And he sends them out all over the world. And when James talked about his brother and him and his brother doing amends with him, when my brother, my younger brother, did amends with me, my heart blew up. It blew up. You know, I thought I was coming for just what it was that was going to happen for me. But so many remarkable things have happened in my life as a result of being a participating member of the self, you know, the life-saving, life-changing experience we call Alcoholics Anonymous. It's way too many for me to say. So when you ask me to go anywhere and do anything at any time, you know, I'm... You know, I think about the gifts of this deal. I got that daughter who was 2 and a half when I came to you guys. She's 39. I never thought, you know, and a driving force. I don't grade my own papers. You know, that's one of the things I don't do. I don't grade my own paper. But I'm going to take the opportunity tonight, since you guys got me up here talking about gifts, I'm going to step outside of that for a minute and I'm going to try to be objective about it. I think one of the greatest gifts that I've been given is I've been trusted with a couple of young ladies that God put on this planet, and he gave them me. Sometimes, you guys, when we talk about powerlessness, don't get confused. Don't confuse powerless with impotence. Don't confuse powerless with purposeless. Don't confuse powerless with irresponsibility. Don't confuse, no. I'm not the source of power, but what we do when we get to Alcoholics Anonymous is we get empowered. What we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, if we come in here, we get connected to power. What we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, if we come up in here and pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools, we get to be a channel and a vessel through which power can flow. So when we talk about this idea of powerlessness, sometimes, you know, I think people get it confused and be like, impotent. You know, as a result of being with you guys for 36 years, I think I'm the best dad to those. I'm not the best dad in the world, but I'm, goddamn it, I'm the best dad for Rain and River White. You know, I'm the, I used to worry about that. Let's put it on the table. I used to worry, did I have what it takes to be a father? Do I have what it takes to be a man in a relationship? Because my track record was sketchy at best. My track record was spotty at best. You know, and thank God I got to you guys when my daughter was 2.5 years old. If I put these girls right here, and my girls are daddy's girls, you know, 2 years ago, the year before. No. It must have been in the pandemic. It must have been in the pandemic, 2021, when the world opened up. My daughters said, Dad, we want to do something for your birthday. My birthday is 9/11. So in September of 2021, it just opened up. I've been all over the place, you guys. I've been all over the world. As a result of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd never been to Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. And my daughter said, Daddy, we're going to take you to D.C., right? Grown girls. And don't pull out a card. Don't do nothing. I can do that. But I couldn't do it. Bob would get, because the daddy, Bob always talks about we have these programs that are programmed. And so I'm programmed as daddy. We get to the hotel. I want dad. We told you no. Okay. All right. Wait a minute. How come we all in one room? Don't you guys want to be in your room? You girl. That's going to spoil the experience, Dad. We all want to be. Okay. Call an Uber. Okay. I got to go. Dad, you know, I'm so locked into that, the dad thing. But my girls, and River is such an organizer. Rain's an attorney. She's 39 years old, giving me the best grants in the world. You know what? You know, if I knew the grants were so cool, I'd have had them first, right? You know, and River's the oldest, and River's the youngest. Rain is the oldest. Rain's an attorney. Rain is, you know, but River has worked in entertainment, worked as EAs for some people in the, so she's such an organizer. And so we had every aspect of the trip organized. I cried the whole, you guys, you made me soft. I just I couldn't believe my life. I would go in the bathroom and I'd just be like, what? Are you serious right now? Because where April at? You know, and that's their third one. That baby right there. When you talk about powerlessness, yeah, I'm powerless over whether or not this baby's going to breathe in and out. But right now, I'm all that this baby has. Relies on me for sustenance. relies on me for care. When they grow older, rely on me for direction. Rely on me for support. And to think that you guys gave me something, and these that got entrusted to my care, I see the finished product. And the thing about it is, you know, A, River, if it wasn't for you guys, I think she'd be okay. I think she'd be a successful young lady. I think she's got that in her. I don't know if she'd be, well, we have what we have in front of us right now. I don't know that she'd be what she is right now. Haven't had a dad that was every step of the way. And you guys, I'm not blowing smoke up my own. Every program, every parent-teacher conference, everything, every school activity, every Delta activity, every law school exam, failed law school exam the first time, we sit and we cry. You know, loss of baby, we sit and we cry. You know, go through whatever we go through, we sit and we cry. You know, and you guys, I'm the one that was going in her piggy bank. And as a result of coming in here and doing what we do wholeheartedly, you know, I get to see the fruits of that. Talk about the gifts of this program. And then River. The world wouldn't know her if I didn't know you. She's 27. I'm 36 years with you guys. The world would not know River White. And it would be a less place for not knowing her. I think about that. I say, wow. Wow. She wouldn't even be on this planet. And so my girls took me to D.C., you guys, and we had this father-daughter deal grown. I had a lot of father-daughter stuff with my girls when they were little because we did a lot. You know, I'm a girl dad, for real. You know, and so one of my girls was an actor, River was an actor, and so the cast would all be, I'm the dad, I'm the, you know. And I used to sit down and I'd be with those kids at the table, man. I'm talking about stuff I never thought of. We'd be at the table after a rehearsal at midnight, and I'd take them all out to Roscoe's, or we'd all go to Denny's, and they thought, oh, River, you got the cool dad. That's what you got to do. And I listen to these kids, and these kids would call me dad, and I'm like, wow, what kind of guy did I bump into? What happened that I wasn't expecting? I just came in here to get the gorilla off me. I didn't know I was coming in here to be a surrogate dad. I didn't know I was coming up here to be a real dad. I didn't know I was coming up in here and I was going to be a granddad. I didn't know I was coming up in here and I'm going to be a son to my mom. My mom is with me right now. She's 92 years old. It's me and her in the house. You know, one of the great gifts that I've had. Me and Leslie, I saw Leslie when she came and got sober. She's in our AA community, and she's in my AA network. You know how you have a group and you guys all run together? When I listen to you two, Dave and Polly, and you, because me and Leslie, that was our thing. I've heard her fifth steps. Not since me and her been together, but years ago. So, you know, we came to each other knowing, oh, ain't no secrets. You know, I've heard her fifth steps before. I was like, she was married, I was married, we were friends, same sort, all that. And many years passed, and Leslie moved to Atlanta. And when she moved to Atlanta with a sponsee of mine. And when she moved to Atlanta with this sponsee of mine, now I knew Leslie longer than I knew my sponsee. He was younger than her, much younger than her in recovery. And so he goes to Atlanta, and Leslie is talking to me even more then, because Thomas ain't talking to me. He go to Atlanta and get enamored with strip club. I'm like, okay, I shouldn't be there. I'm like, I don't want to know what strip club you went to. What meeting do you go to? I'm not hearing from him. Me and Leslie would talk over the time, and then years passed, and Leslie came back to L.A. In 2016, you know, I had my marriage had blown up in 2010, and I was just doing what I do. And she came to my workshop, you know, and because I have a big book workshop we've been doing since 1987. And on Sunday mornings, people from L.A. who moved out of town, when they come back, they usually drop through the workshop and see what we're doing, and we're still going. And she came through, and we started talking, and I was going somewhere to talk in a few months. And we just talked about it, and Leslie being Leslie, oh, I want to go. And I'm like, oh, okay, come on. And we've been ever since, you know, and talk about a gift. Talk about a gift in recovery. You know, I've been, I'm going to sit down from here, and I don't want to blow smoke, but I am. You know, because Dick and Barbara Anderson, you know, we got a long history. You know, Dick, I talked to my aunt last night that you met. Call me out the blue. I guess coincidentally, Dick came to my, Dick and Barbara came to my aunt's house when I was in Memphis some years back when we were doing a Memphis deal. Met my aunt, we went out and ate. And a remarkable example. So when you talk about gifts, I think about people who been put in my life and who touch me, who mentor me, who grow me up. You know, we are babies, me and Les, on this relationship deal that we do. And so we look, and we've had experiences ourselves. But we look to mentors, and we look to couples, and my sponsor and Linda, just powerful, powerful, powerful. You know, I'll one day, and I take pictures, because I'll one day sit up and think, wow, Bob Bazans took the time to care about me. When I met my sponsor, talk about gifts. I'm going to get ready to get out. I had a sponsor originally in Los Angeles for a long time. His name was Bob Hunt. He was not a nationally known guy. He wasn't, but in my recovery community, he cast a big shadow. He was a guy that everybody knew and everybody respected. And Bob sponsored me, and in about my 13th or 14th year of recovery, he moved up north to Northern California. And we were talking and talking. And slowly, the calls slowed down. Turns out that Bob pulled away from AA, had a bad experience. Northern Cal, got real bitter. Conversation started sounding very different. And I'm in now, I'm about 16 years sober. Hit me like a thunderbolt. I'm walking one day, and I had a sponsor, Bob Hunt, but I hadn't talked to him in about a year and a half. I have some principles. I have some guiding principles. Some of the principles I've gotten since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. Some of the principles that I have were already principles of mine that I've been able to really stand by since I got in Alcoholics Anonymous. One of my principles is I'm a very loyal guy. I'm a loyal guy. I play ball. I'm a team guy. It's hard to get me. It's not hard to get my stuff, but it's hard to get me. But when you get me, you got me. And Bob Hunt was my guy. And out of this loyalty to Bob Hunt, I wouldn't look for another sponsor. But I got another principle, new friends. Sometimes you have competing values, competing principles. And sometimes it's not bad to have them, but I got to look at them when they're competing and see which one is the one that is either the one that makes the most sense in that situation or the one that's the most useful. One of my values was I'm loyal. I had an overriding value, though. I need to be accountable, and I need a sponsor. You know, I am not going to go unsponsored in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that's dangerous turf, you know, because if you, and I'm not. So the competing values were, And it hit me. Dude, you're unsponsored. You got a sponsor in name. You feeling like you got to keep this sponsor. So I've been in the street by then, you know, talking. And I had seen this guy. It was two guys I was thinking about. And one of them I knew even longer than Bob, and I knew even better than Bob. And so I knew some other stuff. And I had seen Bob, and I loved, the first time I heard Bob talk, blew my socks off. But the only thing about it is, he's rude, he's arrogant, he's condescending, you know. I don't know if I thought he was rude because I hadn't had an interaction with him, but I thought he was arrogant, I thought he was condescending, and I thought he was aloof. You know, I thought he was aloof, condescending, and arrogant, right? Based on what? Looking at him from back there. The way people might look at me. And the thing about when you get guys to come up here like this, some of the things, there are some things that some guys have in common. And bother me, I'm more comfortable up here than I am sometimes in social interactions. I don't have time for small talk sometimes. Bob will not suffer fools gladly, you know. But Bob has gotten a lot more, Bob is way more patient than I you know, I have. So, but then, the next time, I made the mistake. If you want to keep a misconception, make sure you don't get to talk or know the person. If you want to stay stuck in a misconception, don't get to know the person. Right? That's over all human endeavor. I think that's at the bottom of why it is that people judge folk in the first place. If you want to hold on to something, make sure you don't get to know. Ignorance is the key. Right? So me and Bob then, he didn't know. I was so intrigued. He didn't know when we started having conversations. Or maybe he did. Bob is wise. He can see it. So we started, and I realized that some of what I thought of as aloof was no. I'm real comfortable up here, you guys, but I'm really shy. At my core, I've always been kind of socially like that. Bob is very straightforward, you know. So, and then when we started talking, I realized this is the guy. This is the guy. And my sponsor is not the best sponsor in the world, because all you guys are sponsor. He's the best sponsor in the world for Ralph White. He's the best sponsor in the world for me. Dylan, you feel me? You know what I'm talking about? He's the only man that kisses me on the cheek when he sees me. And he's got a heart that's bigger than this. I was going to say this room than this state. You won't know it. One of the best gifts and one of the greatest gifts I've had in my recovery. And he comes as a package. I get Linda as a result of having my sponsor. And Linda is somebody who is as impactful to me as anybody. Talk about wisdom and talk about deportment. I love it when we read when Bill says about Epi, his deportment shouted out he was a man with an answer. When you see Linda B, isn't that her deportment? You know, talk about the gifts. And this joker right here. I almost couldn't do the talk when Dave jumped up, Polly. Because I wanted to jump, I would have jumped up too. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. My brother knew Polly Pistol well before me. And Ronnie used to talk about Polly because Ronnie would be talking and he would see Polly out. And I hadn't been talking with Polly. Then it got to be me and Polly, and Ronnie doesn't get to see Polly. Me and Polly and Dave stayed together. We stayed in a condo in the Cayman Islands. We've been roomies. Polly took me in. I was the only guy We were down in Nashville, and Polly had a crew. Sonya was there, and Polly had a crew, and one other guy that died. You remember the guy that, and he used to be everywhere. But I was the guy that Polly and her crew let roll with them, and so I've just been, I've been overpaid by the people that I've had the opportunity to be mentored by an Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I didn't mean to take this. The rest of you guys, don't trip. You know, I didn't mean to make this very personal, but Dick asked me. So I'm telling you about the gifts I've gotten. Polly Pistol and Dave Pistol. Top of the list. You know, top of the list. You know, and I'm going to get out from here I think one of the other things too, and Mildred is like kind of like a standing. Mildred, Frank, I'm one of the clearest communicators to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when I hear Mildred, I can really, Mildred and Steve Lee for me really talk directly to me, you know. That's like when Bob labors on me, but those two and I thank you for that. Another person that's been a gift for me, Dick, since you asked me to come up in here, that guy over there in that corner. Thank you, Lee. Thank you. We've done some stuff over the years. We've traveled. We've hung out. We've done things. We've done. And the biggest gift that I get in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm getting ready to set it down, you guys, my fellowship. If you knew, how many, we got any people in here under a year sober? Let me see you. So let me talk to you for just a minute. When we talk about gifts and you hear this joker standing up at the front and he talking about people he know and you don't know him and you feeling left out, come on in. You know, I'm invite you to come on in right now. You know, I don't know. When we talk about the gifts of sobriety, I don't know if you're going to get the girl and I don't know if you're going to get the guy. I don't know if you're going to get a happy marriage. I don't know if the kids are going to come back in your life the way that you want them to come back in your life. I don't know if you're going to get a shiny new car and I don't know if you're going to get the career of your choice. I don't know if you're going to have a lot of money in the bank. I don't know if you're going to have the best of friends. I don't know if you're going to know fame and I don't know if you're going to know fortune. I do not know and I cannot guarantee you what's going to happen if you decide to take this walk with us and take this way of life as your own. But me and you can both guarantee you what's going to happen if you don't. I invite you to take a chance on us. I invite you to take a chance on Alcoholics Anonymous. I invite you to take a chance on dreaming about being a dad again. I invite you to take a chance on dreaming about those kids wanting to look at you with self-respect, with respect in their eyes again. I invite you to take a chance. I know it feels like some of you, especially just raising your hands, might have tried us before and might have found us wanting. Some of you might have tried us before and found like, wait a minute. I'm on the island of misfit toys and I'm a misfit with the misfits. What's wrong with me? We see you. We understand you. We know you. Come all the way in. Sit all the way down. Do what it is that we do. Stop being on the fringe. Just stop dancing around the edge. Just stop doing the hokey pokey. Put your right foot in and take your right foot out. Come all the way in. Sit all the way down. Do what it is that you. There's a gift with your name on it. It may not be Ralph's gift. It may not be Leslie's gift. It may not be by, it's a gift with your name on it. And it's waiting on you to claim it. The thing about grace is it don't require an invitation. And it don't require an appointment. All it requires is an opening. And that's what we specialize in. We get broke open. You ain't gotta be eloquent. You ain't gotta be insightful. You ain't gotta be a guy that can get up to the podium. You ain't gotta be a person that went through and be, oh my God, they are heavy, they are deep, and no. I'm talking about recovery. It ain't got a lot to do with living recovery. All you got to do is be willing and be broken, and grace is available. When we do our third step prayer, the interesting thing about the prayers that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, when you're in junior high school or when you're in high school and you want to go with somebody, you write them a note. Will you go with me? Will you be my girlfriend? You might even know you. And so later on in life, you might get on one knee and you say, will you take me to be your husband? Or wouldn't you take? But the third step is a very interesting kind. You know, when we talk about entering that relationship, you got, it's very interesting. Because when you write that note to that girl, she might say no. When you write that note, or when you go up to that girl and say, will you go with me? She might say, no, I'm already with somebody. When you say, baby, will you take me to be yours? Let me think about it. But when I get on my knees and I say, God, I offer myself to you. I don't have to come right. I don't have to be right. I don't have to get right. I don't have to have stopped stealing. I don't have to have stopped lying. I don't have to have stopped tricking. I don't have to stop doing none of that. Come as you are. And I say, God, I offer myself to you. And I guarantee you, of all the people who've done a third step in here, how many people have done a third step in here? Okay, look at the hands for the people who haven't. Of all the people who've done a third step in here, of all the people who have said, God, I offer myself to you, how many of you have God said, I don't want you? Nope, I reject it. God, I offer myself to you. Just like that. Just like that. Just like that. That's what it takes. When you talk about the gifts, you ain't got to merit it. You ain't got to be, you know, naughty or nice. He ain't checking the list and checking it twice. Just like that, I offer myself to you. The gifts are coming. You know, grace is available. That's what this program is really about. You know, you're going to hear some people this weekend talking about these 12 steps, and you're going to hear some people remarkably talking about the process of recovery that's outlined. My sponsor, and I keep talking about it, says, Ralph, if you're reading this book, for anything other than relationship with the power, you're using it as a management tool, and that's human power. So all of the stuff that people are going to be talking about this weekend, none of the people who are going to be talking on any of those steps are going to talk about these steps have the power. The steps are access to. Steps are vehicle to. Steps are pathway to. Steps are roadmap to. There is a power, and thank God there is a power, and that power has done some remarkable thing in this guy's life, and I'm glad that you guys gave me an opportunity to come up here and just share a little bit of it with you. You know, I have been overpaid. I'm going to use my mama's favorite saying, you know, and you might want to make a song out of this one too, Sonia, one day. It's my mama's favorite saying. She says, my mom says, I'm drinking out my saucer because my cup is overflowing. And I have been overly blessed, you guys, since I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm drinking out my saucer. My name is Ralph White, and I am an alcoholic.